Well, looks like we're going to do this old-fashioned way again. There you go. If you'd like to follow along, I'm going to take a passage from Deuteronomy, the 5th chapter, and that'll introduce our study this morning. It's good to see you all. Good to be with you. Good singing this morning. Beautiful songs. Appreciate the opportunity of being with you and being able for just a few moments to talk about some things we find in God's Word. And, of course, today is Mother's Day. We can't overlook that. Pretty obvious. And so we thought we'd make some comments about it. Mother's Day is something that is special in our life because mamas are special in our life. They always have been, and they always will be. An old Jewish proverb makes a statement, says, who is best taught but he who first learned from his mother? I thought, that's a pretty good one. I think that's one we all need to keep in mind. A Spanish proverb says, an ounce of mother is worth a ton of clergy. Well, I think that one may be true also. Abraham Lincoln said, no man is poor who has had a godly mother. There's a lot of great things that have been said about mothers, and maybe some ugly things, but for the most part, there are wonderful things that are said. Matter of fact, they can trace observances back to the position, the influence of mothers, even back to maybe about 600 BC, the classical age of the Greeks, and the writings that they would have at that time. Deuteronomy, the 5th chapter, is Moses makes a rehearsal of the Ten Commandments. He gave them all, we all know, in the Exodus, the 20th chapter, after the children of Israel came out of Egypt. And then they wandered in the wilderness for 40 some odd years or so. And just before they go over into the promised land, Moses gives his last speech to the children of Israel. And he rehearses several things, and among them, in Deuteronomy, the 5th chapter is the Ten Commandments. Except that it's good to read them because he expands on the thought a little bit more in Deuteronomy, the 5th chapter. But when he comes to that point, instead of in Exodus 20 where he just says, honor your mother and your father, he says here, honor your father and your mother as the Lord your God has commanded you, that your days may be long and that it may be well with you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you. The honor of parents, the respect that is due them, is helpful for you in very practical ways, as he is saying. He says, to some degree, it will affect your life and generally the length of your life, and that it may be a good life, or it will be well for you in that land where you go, in which God is giving you. And you would think, well, if God's giving it to us, we'd all be blessed by it. That's true. But part of how God blesses us is by respecting the things he has taught, which brings us back to the top of it, honoring father and mother. To honor father and mother was to, first of all, respectively, to obey them. And then more than that, to always remember them. And nevertheless, we've set aside a special day in our society and in several others in which we would remember mothers. We'll get to the fathers later. The second Sunday in May is when we remember mothers. Started out in the early 1900s, and I think 1918 or 15, somewhere in there, they made it a national holiday to remember mothers. I think some 50 or so nations observe it, I think, at the same time we do, I believe. A lot of other nations do it at different times, but it is something that comes quite easy to nations to remember their mothers. And we certainly honor them all, not just today on one particular Lord's Day, but to remember them always and be a person that would reflect upon them. I want to talk for just a little while this morning, if I could, this idea of just some thoughts that could come to us. And there's so many things you could say, that so many ideas, probably we ask every single person here, we'd come up with a different good thought to probably make a 4-hour sermon out of it. But I wanted just some thoughts that come to our mind that are general in nature, but also very, very important. So let me just suggest to you, first of all, when I think of it, I think of the celebration of just the thing you think of when you think of mom, that person that would love you no matter what, that would do anything for you, and in my case, sometimes take a switch and whip the fire out of me with it. But generally, though, to love and encourage and be that one that always would be there, and you could always depend on them. You can't think of mom or mother or motherhood without thinking of that person of love and devotion and affection. I mean, just kind of so many words you could talk about the laboring hours that they do to provide for you and a family, the place they are. You become identified with that. It's the place you belong. It's the place you identify with. And today, I'm sorry to say, our families in our nation are so many times scenes of confusion and disarray and disorder and anger and violence. And you almost don't want to watch the evening news because of it. But homes were to be always guided by mom and dad, and that was an atmosphere that was developed there. The children could be raised there to appreciate right and wrong, to appreciate the idea of love, to appreciate the idea of discipline, of saying we don't do this, we do this, and how much we so desperately need that today. Life began with God in the miracle of creation. Genesis 2 and verse 7, and the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. But not only that, not only did God create him, but God was creating man in his own image. Back in the first chapter, Genesis 1:27, and God created man in his own image. In the image of God created him, male and female created he them. We were created in the image of God, that we are a spiritual being. We're an eternal being. We're going to spend eternity somewhere. That's what it means to be a man or a woman, that we were created by God because to be like God, life and family, that relationship was something that God intended us to have and to understand. And all other situations being exceptions to that. I recognize that some people don't have a family. It happens, and I'm sorry for that. I'm sorry there are so many people who have families that are just sad situations, terrible situations. But what God intended and what he created was a place in which love and devotion and affection, along with discipline and truth and being a person who wants to do what's right, that's what God intended for us. If you're following along, look with me over in Genesis, the third chapter. In Genesis, the third chapter, we have a development in that it was through God, through mothers, that God decided to perpetuate life through the process we call procreation. In Genesis, the third chapter, in verse 20, it says, and Adam called his wife's name Eve because she was the mother of all living. Keep in mind now that Moses was writing this, obviously, several hundred years later. And when he looked back and looked at the first two, you can say, I guess Adam was the father of all living and Eve was the mother of all living. But he is emphasizing this point here in this discussion in the third chapter. The third chapter. And I recognize that man himself had a part in all this procreation, but it's mother here that is bearing the point that he wants to make here of having a special role. Forgive me. I'm having to struggle my throat. East Texas can be tough on you. Over in 1 Timothy, the second chapter, Paul makes a statement over there. What he actually is discussing in 1 Timothy, the second chapter, he's discussing some things he wants done in a local congregation, some things he doesn't want done. and some disciplines that need to be exercised. And he says, in the manner of let women adorn themselves in modest apparel, verse 9. In verse 11, let a woman learn in silence with all submission. He did not permit a woman to teach or usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. In verse 13, for Adam was formed first, and then Eve. In verse 14, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. Both committed sin, but it seems as though she was the one deceived. Nevertheless, it says in verse 15, she would be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith and love and holiness with self-control. One of the great things about the woman that he wanted to never have to be forgotten was that woman played such an important part in salvation in the history of this world. That's what he's talking about when he says, nevertheless, she will be saved in childbearing. It doesn't mean that's a part of the plan of salvation. It means that she gave birth to the Redeemer, and that's how the Redeemer came into this world, and that she was expected to be a person of faith and love and holiness. And what a blessing to know, to know that God has given a very special role to the ladies, and it should always be understood that it's that way, a blessing upon their children also. We celebrate and cherish life through mothers. And that life goes beyond the grave. That life began here, was created here, but goes on and continues on. Jesus said in John 10, in verse 10, I came that you might have life and have it more abundantly. That's what John 3:16 is talking about. God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. That life began in the mother's womb, was identified with God as a spiritual being. We have then, interesting, well, let me show you another one. We have an interesting description where he talks about we have a spiritual mother above. Look with me in Galatians, the fourth chapter. I don't think we have time to go into the whole thing, but he wants to draw a picture in your mind of the things that he wants us to think with regard to man and woman and the relationship to it and their relationships concurrently with God. In verse 6, and because you are sons, God sent forth his Spirit of the Son into your hearts, crying, Abba, Father. And when we read in the previous verse, he makes this statement in verse 4, but when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his Son, born of a woman, born under the law. The Redeemer, the Creator of the universe, was born of a woman. All we got to do is go back and read Matthew 1 and 2 and then Luke 1 and 2. And we appreciate the place, the position, the process of the great Redeemer coming into this world. He didn't come into this world by an explosion out of heaven like a masters of the universe. He chose to be born of a woman just like all the other people. But come on down with me to, verse 21. It's kind of a symbolic statement he makes it, but it's also the idea of a mother that is above. Verse 21, tell me you who desire to be under the law. Do you hear the law? Do you not hear the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, one of the bondwoman, the other of a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born according to the flesh, and he of the free woman through promise. Verse 24. Which things are symbolic? For these are the two covenants, the one from Mount Sinai, which gives birth to bondage, which is Hagar, For this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to Jerusalem, which now is and is in bondage to her children. Jerusalem is in bondage. That was an unpopular thought, even to this day, for the Jewish people when they read Paul's statement. But look at verse 26. But the Jerusalem above is free, which is the mother of us all. The Jerusalem which is above, or the Jerusalem above, he's talking about spiritually. The spiritual Jerusalem, the place where God is, where his temple is, where we meet with him. He's talking about the church. He's talking about the called out people of the world, and we are the people of God. And that's the point he wants, and then he just describes it, which is the mother of us all. It's a fascinating thought. Truly special a truly special mother not only is concerned about the physical, but also concerned about the spiritual as well, and the role that the Word of God plays in our hearts and minds. Look with me at another one that kind of is the opposite side of it, but it's so very important. We talk about the celebration of love and life, but with Eve also was a reminder of death and sorrow. And that's the saddest part about it. Look with me back in Genesis again. And you know this story, but we'll read it again nonetheless. In Genesis, the second chapter, we read where it says, "But of the tree," verse 17, "But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die." That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? In the day you eat of it, you will die. And of course, we remember in the third chapter where the serpent comes to Eve and they have a conversation. And in verse 6, it results in verse 6, it says, "So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, and the tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. And she also gave to her husband with her, and he ate." She became the mother of all living. And then the mother of all living had to deal with death, didn't she? But not only that, her very actions was not only that brought life into this world, but brought death into this world. And I don't for a moment think for any moment that it was an intentional design on her part. I don't think that. I think she wasn't thinking clearly or thinking seriously about what happened. Because when God just says, "But of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, you shall not eat, for in the day you eat it, you shall surely die." I don't know how stern God was when he said that, but just the statement of it is very, very pointed. I don't think there's anything more difficult than to go to a family who has suffered the loss of a child. That is extremely difficult. It's difficult for everyone. It's difficult to do a funeral for a child, one who has been killed in an accident or something of that nature. And it is a burden that is carried. And I thought sometimes about what Eve must have thought. As much as we value life, and all of the opportunities and all of the hope that we have, it's also appointed to us that one day we must pass from this life. Like Paul said over in Romans 6, verse 23, the wages of sin is death. It's appointed to us to face death. God told Adam, if you're back there with me in Genesis, the third chapter, he told Adam, he said, "In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and dust you shall return." The sweat of your face. How difficult life can be and how difficult it is the point he's getting at. And it's going to be that way for your entire life. And until the Lord returns, mothers and fathers will not be able to escape this. We think of the most precious gift of life being given to us and the blessings we enjoy from it. But to this very day, we understand that we all face death. We've all been to funerals. We've all had to be involved in doing funerals, and it's not easy. There's many people here today who've lost their mothers, and they have gone on, and they have passed on from this life. And Mother's Day may remind us of that. Mom has passed on, and we have memories of her that are important for us. This could be a very sober time for us, but there is hope that death will be overcome. Well, that's what we're reading here in Genesis, the third chapter. And again, he's talking about the woman and the part she plays in. Look at verse 15. Go back up to verse 14. Genesis 3rd chapter, verse 14. "So the Lord God said to the serpent, 'Because you have done this, you are cursed more than all cattle and more than every beast of the field. On your belly you shall go, and you shall eat dust all the days of your life. And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed, and she shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. And you know who that's going to come, who's going to crush his head. That's the point he wants them to understand. And that we're moving forward to where Paul says over in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 26, that the very last enemy to be destroyed is death. It's interesting, the life that's developed by Eve and the relationships between her and Adam and what she started out as, what she continued, but what she also had to shoulder was this idea that she brought death into this world also, unfortunately, by her decisions, and he also. But let's not allow that to discourage us and give us thought for an end, because we know there's an end coming to this. Psalms 90 and verse 10, David writes, the days of our years are 70, or even by reason of strength 80 years. Yet is there pride but labor and sorrow, for it is soon gone and we fly away. We're not here for very long. And then if you continue down verse 12. He goes on to say, so teach us to number our days that we may have a heart of wisdom. When we talk about this relationship, the mother of all living, she was also the one who had to deal with death and the results of her own foolish decision, as you may say. But she also was the mother of the Redeemer. And that's what he's getting at when we read what we just read. I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between her, your seed and her seed. He shall bruise your head. And crush probably would be a better word. And you will bruise or crush his heel. She's a great reminder of what she had to face and whatever mothers had to face since then. Let me suggest to you, last of all, thoughts on Mother's Day is a reinforcing of holiness from moms all through the Bible. And we could have made a whole sermon just out of this, just this idea of these examples of good mothers. If you're there with me in Genesis, look over in Genesis 17. In Genesis 17, Abraham is praying to God. He wants God to accept Ishmael as his heir. And God is saying, no, you're going to have a son of your own. And Abraham is just amazed by this idea. And let's see, we're in Genesis 17. Look at verse 15. Then God said to Abraham, as your wife Sarai, as for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah, which shall be her name. And that change in name, Sarah, means princess, doesn't it? In verse 16, and I will bless her and also give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of peoples shall be from her. When you read in Adam and Eve, Eve was the mother of all living. We've all descended from her, but Sarah would be one that would have nations descend from her. And yet you can see, as you continue down through there, verse 17, then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said in his heart, shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years of age? And shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? And Abraham said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. And they were talking about some other things. And God just finally says, no, it's going to be Sarah. It's going to be you and Sarah. And that's the way it turned out. But this being described as a mother of nations is what Sarah would be described as. And then you turn over in the book of Samuel, this great story of Hannah. She is desperate in wanting to have a child, Hannah's vow, and her husband is very understanding of she's not able to have a child, she's not able to conceive. First chapter of 1 Samuel, then Elkanah, her husband said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? And why is your heart grieved? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? That's a tough situation, isn't it? Sound like dumb questions from a husband who don't appreciate she wants to have a child. And yet, he is understanding. He says, may God bless you in what you're trying. Verse 22, but Hannah did not go up. Once she becomes pregnant, she's going to wait till he's weaned. But Hannah did not go up, for she had said to her husband, not until the child is weaned, then I will take him, that he may appear before the Lord and remain there. And Elkanah, her husband, said, do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only let the Lord establish his word. I think he was very caring and open-minded, but she was determined. She wanted to have a child, and she continued to pray to the Lord. And she's one of these great people. We don't have time to go ahead and discuss it all, but to produce one of the great, great prophets of the Old Testament in Samuel. Or Elizabeth. Look over in the New Testament with me. In Luke, the first chapter, look at the description that's given there. Luke 1, and we read down talking about Elizabeth and now let's look at verse 5. Luke, the first chapter, verse 5. There was in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest named Zacharias of the division of Abijah. His wife was of the daughter of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. And they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord, blameless. But, there's always that but, isn't there, in so many wonderful stories. They were righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord, blameless. But they had no child because Elizabeth was barren, and they were both well advanced in years. And she goes on to have a child, John the Baptist, which was the one who would announce Jesus on the world's stage. And then, of course, if you continue further down in Luke, the first chapter, you have about verse 38, well, we can't read all of it, but just verse 38, Mary said, behold, the maidservant of the Lord, let it be to me according to your word. And the angel departed from her. I mean, these kinds of attitudes were the attitudes that great women throughout the Bible had. Wonderful attitudes, and attitudes that all of us are to have today, and not just Sarah, Hannah, Elizabeth, and Mary, but several others that you could read about, and their attitude was much different than what we read today, or hear today, or see today. There is a need in our society today to understand truly what is acceptable to the Lord, a holiness that would allow us to approach God and be blessed. When we come to the point in our life, when we choose to be blessed of God or to be politically correct, we're going to have to make a decision, and that's coming. But being blessed of God is that which these people, the difficulties they had, they made mistakes like everybody does, and yet they would strive to be what God would have them to be. And we need to keep that in mind. We need to keep those thoughts before us. When we allow the sitcoms to define our idea of what is family and what is right and what is a mother and a father and maybe what the relationship is, we have gone overboard. We've lost our way. And we need to stop and think about that. That's the reason we have the Bible. We need to spend time reading it. We can't afford to have Hollywood define for us what would be good to the Lord, or some feminist movement or some other movement would allow us to stand before God acceptable. It's not going to happen. We need to read the Bible and find out what holy people of God did in Old and New Testament. And for that matter, when it gets down to our government condones things that you and I can't barely speak of in our own homes. And so we need to stop and think about that. That we have very good mothers and fathers, but on this day, good mothers who practice holiness. And that's what we need. We need homes of holiness, mamas and daddies who are concerned about honoring God and not the world. Sometimes we get lost. It's interesting, Jesus' attitude toward his mother, wasn't it? Luke, the 12th chapter. If you're following along with me, Luke, the 12th chapter, and we look down at about verse, Matthew, the 12th chapter. Matthew, the 12th chapter. Jesus is speaking and teaching, and some people come to him in verse Matthew 12, verse 46. And while he was still talking to the multitudes, behold, his mother and brothers stood outside seeking to speak with him. And then one said to him, look, your mother and your brothers are standing outside seeking to speak with you. But he answered and said to them, who is my mother and who is my brother? And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples and said, here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of God, of my Father, the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. It doesn't say he didn't have a concern for and a love for his mother, because on the cross, one of the last things he said and did was to prepare his mom and to think about her and to tell someone, you take care of my mother. You understand? And so his concern was for that, but he could see the difference in doing the will of God. That's part of the idea that we need to reinforce the idea of holiness in a corrupt world. And it's not the easiest thing to do. But it wasn't easy then either. It comes from a result of people deciding, this is the life I'm going to live, and I don't care what the nation or the government think about it. I'm going to live a life for the Lord. And mamas and daddies, that's what we need to do with our families. We need to talk to them and talk with them about how they should live their lives. You're here this morning. You're not a child of God. We extend to you heaven's invitation. Really hadn't been talking this morning about obeying the gospel, but we've been talking about mothers, which is a very important subject. You're here this morning, and you're not, you haven't obeyed that gospel. We give you this opportunity. Jesus said, go into all the world and preach the gospel. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He that believeth not shall be damned. And that's not the only thing. You need to read and have a further understanding of the other things we must do to come to God in his appointed way. Not what the world would say or some writer, but a faith strong enough to be obedient to the Lord. And that is the key to it. That's the kind of faith that we should have. If you're subject to heaven's call this morning, would you please come? We stand.